This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Live Radio Web Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may dwell upon this earth. Ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you this program is obviously oriented primarily to European Americans and other people of European descent, but there are many people of other races who are listening to this program. I've been getting a lot of emails from all sorts of different ethnic and racial groups from around the world, and I'm even a bit surprised how positive a lot of the response has been from many of these individuals around the world. It's really been quite good, ladies and gentlemen, and I guess I shouldn't be surprised, because the ideas that I present here for my own people are consistent ideas. They're not hypocritical ideas. They're not like the Rabbi Shmuley, who supports segregation and apartheid for Israel and integration and neighborhood destruction for America. My ideas are pretty consistent. And I'm not a supremacist either. I don't believe that one race should rule over another. In fact, I think that all peoples on this planet have a right to run their own affairs and to keep their own homelands as they desire them to be, in terms of their economics, in terms of their culture, in terms of their media, in terms of their music, in terms of their language, and every other aspect of their lives. They should have the control and say-so, and not some sort of international, multinational corporation with the gobs of money they can throw in and control elections with, or the media with, and certainly not the Jewish supremacists who seek to dominate and control this planet over everybody else. I've got a few things to talk about today, I think, which you'll find interesting, and one thing I want to go to right now, I want to go to davidduke.com. and talk to you about a recent article that I posted. It was an article by Justin Raimondo of antiwar.com. I'm not going to read the article here, but I'm going to share with you my note on the article, because I think it's pertinent to what's going on, and then some of the facts that are included in the article itself. Now, the article is called Covering the Tracks of the Anthrax Attacks. It's an interesting article about the media-forgotten anthrax attacks against America. They were a key component in launching the American War for Israel in Iraq. As I've documented in my book, Jewish Supremacism, Israel has repeatedly betrayed and even attacked the United States in false flag operations for the strategic interests of Israel. In fact, one of the things that I say to people, which is shocking, I ask them, what is the only Mideast country, nation, government in the Mideast that's actually attacked the United States of America, then terrorist attacks against the United States of America? And I love to see their face when I tell them, well, it's the nation of Israel, the nation we've given $100 billion to. In the Levant affair, the Israeli government actually launched terrorist firebomb attacks against American installations in Egypt in an attempt to get America into war with that country. Now, that's a very, not only would those attacks have killed Americans if they would not have been stopped early on, but think about the fact that of the losses that America would have suffered in an actual major war with Egypt at that time. And by the way, that time there weren't so many smart weapons. It would have certainly cost a lot more lives, as wars in that period of time always did. And it would cost billions of dollars. And to think about going against a country that had not done us any harm, any wrong. The same way that Saddam Hussein did not have any weapons of mass destruction and did not attack us, suddenly we were in a war against Saddam Hussein. For America, no, because Israel wanted to secure their realm. After the Levant affair, we also had the situation in 1967 with Israel, with unmarked planes and torpedo boats, launching a murderous attack against the USS Liberty. The Liberty was an American intelligence ship in international waters. 34 Americans died and 183 were grievously wounded, and maimed. In the Jonathan Pollard case, Israel spied on the American intelligence network and then sold the material to the Soviets. Israel sold the material to the Soviets. The espionage devastated American operations in Europe and resulted in the death of many of our operatives. In the 9/11 catastrophe, there is abundant evidence that Israel knew the details of the attack in advance and treacherously did not warn American authorities. They saw the attacks as an advantage for Israel. And indeed, we caught five Israeli Mossad agents on top of a building, and we arrested them, by the way. They were filming and cheering the 9/11 attacks. That's right, filming and cheering the 9/11 attacks. And by the way, if we could cut off, we've had some technical difficulty this evening, as we frequently do. I will continue on recording this program. You may pick it up a little later. Or, of course, you can go to archives. So as soon as I finish, the recorded version of the program will be perfect. And you can go back and you can hear the show from the beginning or any parts of the program that you've missed. You can download it and then go to wherever you want to in the program and listen to what you want to listen to. So anyway, get your questions and your thoughts right now into davidduke.com. The new email address that we're using now is info44@davidduke.com. That's the email address. You can email me directly. That's info44@davidduke.com. And remember that the old email addresses that could be in your address book for my website and to reach me personally may not be good. We have to change those sites, those email addresses, those email boxes from time to time because of spam and other problems. So we will change those as many times as we need. The easiest way to do that is to go to davidduke.com and just hit the info button or the contact button or the email button, and you can punch on that, and you can go directly to me with an email. And, of course, you can go to stormfront.org, the town hall section. I'm going to go on with this this introduction for you. Yes, the 9/11 attacks, a Fox News special investigative report quoted FBI sources as saying that given Israel's extremely close monitoring of the hijackers, quote, how could they not have known? In other words, how could they not have known when the attacks were going to take place? The five Israeli Mossad agents caught celebrating the attacks were arrested filming and cheering the attacks. They flunked lie detector exams and were later released to Israel by the super Zionist Michael Chertoff. Boy, Michael Chertoff gets around, doesn't he? He had the connection actually with the man suspected of financing the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993 and the latest World Trade Center attacks of 2001. That was Magdu Elmer. That's right. That sounds crazy, but that's exactly the fact. And Chertoff also is the man that totally flubbed and disastrously reacted to the Hurricane Katrina situation, cost many lives. And he also has the dubious distinction of being the one that authorized my prosecution after I went on Al Jazeera and criticized him for letting the Israeli spies that were caught in the wake of 9/11 go. Obviously, the Israeli government, the Israeli Mossad, had many agents all over America in a so-called Israeli or Israel art student scandal. They were infiltrating many parts of the American government. We had more than 100 of them in custody, and we know that they were actually monitoring the hijackers like Muhammad Atta in Hollywood, Florida. Five of these agents, in fact, lived on his same street in Hollywood, Florida. And isn't it convenient for Chertoff to let these guys go back to Israel outside the reach of the 9/11 commissions and investigations into 9/11? So anyway, a high-ranking Israeli general, to show you, to go on to more of the Israeli treachery, a high-ranking Israeli general revealed that in the prelude to the Iraq war, the Israeli government gave America patently false information on the non-existent Iraqi weapons of mass destruction. Now, in the anthrax attacks of 4 years ago, the evidence strongly points to an Israeli partisan named Philip Zak, who had once worked in the weapons-grade anthrax research facility that made the identical anthrax weapons material used in the attacks, including the material that was used and sent to the United States Senate and specifically to Tom Daschle's office and others. A number of biological weapons were stolen from the facility where he worked, and it can be shown that Zach entered the facility illegally after his employment ended, where he had no authorization to go in. Evidence also suggests that he was the one who was behind a letter mailed to the FBI in wake of the anthrax scare implicating a scientist of Egyptian descent who worked at the facility. Now, the FBI does not believe the Egyptian was involved in any way, but the scenario is almost an exact replay of the treachery of the Levon affair. Unleash an attack upon America and blame the Egyptians for the terrorism. The FBI realized from the start that the letter itself reveals knowledge that only the real anthrax killer and terrorist would have known. The evidence points strongly to Jewish supremacist Philip Zak. Interesting, the notes that were sent with the anthrax said, you know, death to America, death to Israel. Now, naturally, this whole story has not been much publicized in America's controlled media, but the article by Justin Raimondo revealing the important details is available on davidduke.com, and I hope all of you go and read that article and, you know, just add it to one more bit of information we have about the perfidy of our great and wonderful ally, Israel. It's just—it's incredible, ladies and gentlemen, how the how this goes on and on and on. You know, we have a nation which is not sharing the same interests of the United States of America, being the most powerful lobby in the United States Congress, a foreign nation being the most powerful lobby. I want to go to some emails. I've got a whole bunch of interesting ones for you, and I first want to share with you an email on the Katrina situation from a former New Orleans resident. It's kind of a revealing email, and it says a lot about what's happening down there, and it talks about a lot about how that the white folks in the area have really been not helped adequately. And this is from a gentleman named Anthony, and this is what he says. David, I am of similar origins as you, born in New Orleans, raised in the Ninth Ward, shopped in Gentilly. We moved to the suburb, St. Bernard, in the early 70s. I attended Catholic schools from kindergarten to Holy Cross, moved further out, Slidell, as I started my own family. See, what happened is many New Orleanians, their schools were destroyed with forced integration. They had to go to Catholic schools or private schools, and so they would be safe, the kids would be safe. And, of course, it was a tremendous economic burden on the people of New Orleans, obviously, because they had to pay taxes for the public educational system, taxes they, you know, which they couldn't use. They couldn't use the public schools. And so many families had a very difficult time financially just to make sure their children were safe. And, again, you know, there's no sympathy for these white folks in terms of our national media in America. The only sympathy you ever hear about is discrimination against blacks, not about how whites couldn't even use their own schools. All right, he says, so he moved to Slidell, started his own family. Then I said to hell with New Orleans and the rampant black crime rate, which is, by the way, one of the worst in America, and moved to the Midwest, St. Louis area. Things here in the Midwest are okay, but they're still not home. All my family and the wives, or for that matter, live and lived in the metro New Orleans area. I made frequent trips to New Orleans for work and family, so I have stayed current and still maintain strong ties to the area. I was planning on moving back within the next couple of months as the kids are grown. One has graduated from Missouri State University, and the youngest was attending Loyola New Orleans on academic scholarship. She was valedictorian of her class of almost 300 students in a very good school district. I currently have 23 people living in my house because of Katrina. A lot of the immediate family was still living in St. Bernard, which suffered total devastation. I cannot believe. Well, that's not really true, because I do believe what I'm seeing on TV. If I didn't believe the way things could be in New Orleans, I'd still be living in the New Orleans area. Those blankety blank blank blank, he just has a lot of numerical symbols there, animals. And it's true. I think calling the people that committed these rapes and murders and shot at the rescuers, you know, I think they're worse than animals. I respect the people in the animal kingdom. I don't respect those. I'm not saying that all blacks behave that way and all blacks are that way, but certainly too many of them and too big a segment of the New Orleans residents behaved in that manner. People in St. Bernard and Plaquemines, go back to the letter from my editorializing, people in St. Bernard and Plaquemines have no help, no help. Over a week into this thing, people are still waiting for help. These are the hardest hit areas of the storm. I really believe the people calling the shots are afraid to move any resources away from the inner city for fear of the race card backlash, mainly because these areas would be considered white bedroom communities, reverse discrimination at its worst. Well, that's absolutely true. I'm going to comment here. That's absolutely true, Anthony. And there's been huge amounts of accusation that the fact that New Orleans help wasn't adequate was the fact of white racism. In fact, even the President of the United States had to defend himself against that accusation. Oh, no, we weren't racist. Anyway, he goes on to say, now I see people rescuing dogs and cats in the inner city. When people in St. Bernard and Plaquemines are still dying and still waiting for help, I'd never thought I'd live to see the day that a black person's pet was more valuable than a white man or woman's life. What can I do to take back my life, my city, and my country from this teeming mass of the thing, all I can call mocha termites? My job is held over my head. If I dare say anything that the emperor is naked, unquote, I will be fired. Many, many whites in the country are being held hostage and silenced by the fact that we need to provide for the family. Anyway, what can I do to help stop this madness? Anthony, what can you do? You can, you know, I agree. You have a lot of very strong and powerful complaints. And you have a lot of reason to be angry and upset and very frustrated with our government and our society in this country. But Anthony, I must tell you this, that you, and as well as so many other whites, are partially responsible for this situation. You're complaining about the situation, and you've probably complained about it many times with family and friends over a beer or you know, over whatever, probably half the time probably while you're watching some sort of ball game, you know, dominated by African Americans. But how many times, what have you actually done to support organizations and people who have stood up for our cause? The Jewish supremacists, they support their organizations. White survivalists don't, it seems. You know, blacks support the NAACP. They stand for their candidates. They stick together. I've heard it said many, many times, whites don't stick together. Well, I always respond to those whites that say such a thing with, well, okay, you know, you're right. You know, what are you doing? The time has come that we have to make some real sacrifices for this cause. I'm talking about financially. I'm talking about spiritually. I'm talking about time-wise. I mean, we've got to make some real sacrifices and spend a real effort. This has got to become a big part of your life, the salvation of our people. How many friends do you talk to? How many books do you distribute? How many pieces of literature do you distribute? You're on the internet now. How many times have you sent emails out to new people on websites around the country? You know, you can legally go into a website and send an email to a webmaster on the site or to the email of a president of a company and write them personally about what's going on, you know, and give links to our site, to other sites. You can join forums and get this material out. You know, none of us really have a right to complain. I feel like I have a right to complain because I'm trying to do something about it. And I've paid my dues in that respect in many, many ways. And I think you have a right to complain too, but you also must realize that if you're going to complain about things, you're going to have to do something to solve these problems. And if you don't do something, then your family, that daughter you have, what are her grandchildren going to look like? What are her great-grandchildren going to be like? What kind of a society are they going to live in? You've got a hell of a responsibility, my friend. And everybody listening to this does. You know, if you don't do it, you don't do something about this, who's going to do it? Please tell me. You know, I can't do it all. My God, I can put out some articles, but it's up to you to circulate them. It's up to you to get these materials out to our people around the country. It really is. I can't do it by myself. It's going to take, you know, your work to really get, you know, to get things right and get things straight again. Now, I've got some other things here. Let me see if I can find this. I had a very interesting I have a very interesting, in fact, email, if I can find the son of a gun. This is an interesting one. You're all going to drop your jaw when you hear this one, but it's kind of interesting for me, and I want to share it with you. Here's what a Jewish lady wrote to me a few days ago. And I'm going to quote this letter exactly. I'm not going to quote the whole thing because it's too long. And she wrote me a book, but I'm going to give you some very key paragraphs and let you hear for yourself what she wrote. And it's just an amazing letter. This is it. This is what she writes. All right. And we'll call her Helen. She says, "You know, it took a guy I really despised to open my eyes to hypocrisy in my own community. And you know what? I don't hate you anymore. In fact, I will never criticize one more bit of anti-Semitism until we Jews eliminate the powerful elements of anti-Gentilism in our midst." You made up that term, but it sure fits. "When I read your introduction to Jewish supremacism, I went back and thought about my Jewish upbringing, and I can't tell you how many times in the synagogue, in Jewish reading material, from 1,000 different sources, I have read the most hateful things about Gentiles. Schindler's List is not just a hate screed against the Germans, but against all Europeans and Christians in particular. It goes out of its way to show Schindler was a flawed but righteous Gentile, a real exception to evil Gentiles. Schindler's List and all the every five minute Holocaust mentionings are calculated to produce the utmost in hatred in Jews toward Gentiles. And yes, I agree, in Gentiles, guilt. You know, it's called hate for Gentiles to criticize the crucifixion of Christ by the Jews, but somehow it's not hate to blame all the Gentiles for the greatest mass murder of all time. Oops, you know what? I've been writing Gentile with a small letter G and Jew with a capital J. You made me look at everything in a new light. As a Jew from New Jersey, I know perfectly well how disgusting the word shiksa is, and I'm ashamed of the fact that I've used the word 1,000 times myself. I hope you're sincere about just being against the Jewish extremists, not against every Jew. I do realize that the extremists completely control my community and maybe even yours as well. If they're not exposed, they will lead both your people and my people to utter ruin. They are certainly leading the world to hatred and bloodshed. If not for the Iraq War, I would not have ever opened up to read your material. It was a war for Israel. Almost anyone of intelligence knows that what you say about the Iraq War as a war for Israel is true. I feel guilty that people who are Jewish leaders are responsible for so much bloodshed, not just for the Iraqis, but for Americans as well. The American people have really been good to me and my family. We're better off here than in any country or people have ever lived in the world. We pay you back by killing or maiming tens of thousands of American boys and girls in this illegal, lying war for Israel? So I've said my piece. Peace be with you. I will try to do my part to work against the supremacists among us. Next week, I will read Israel Shahak's book, but you know, as a pretty honest Jewish woman executive, and by what I already know, I believe I won't be surprised by anything I read. My father, who is 72 years old, feels like I do. He was really shocked when I told him that David Duke led me the truth about the extremism in Judaism, but he wisely told me that sometimes it takes your enemy to reveal your own errors. Mr. Duke, in fact, she wrote, "Dr. Duke, you are no longer my enemy. You've helped me see the truth, and that is a precious gift." So she went on a few more subjects, but let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that was a very impressive letter to me. And, you know, I was amazingly impressed with it. And I'm glad to see that some Jews are beginning to understand my real motivations. And this woman seemed pretty sincere. And she's even taking responsibility for the Jewish supremacism within her own community, you know, and that's pretty, you know, amazing. And it's just amazing that she would share this this letter with me, and she just validated basically almost everything that I've been saying on this issue for so long, and you know, such a fantastic letter, a big impact on me for sure. This is from Gabriel. He says, a very interesting program broadcast September 18. I hope you continue to send important messages. Well, I'll certainly do my best to do that. Let's see. This is an interesting one. This is from another Jewish individual. I got this actually a few hours earlier, but I put this next to the one from the Jewish lady. She said, David, although I am Jewish, I totally agree with many of your writings about Israel controlling the U.S. and the entire war for Iraq is for the interest of the Israel state. May God bless you. Pretty amazing, ladies and gentlemen. Pretty amazing. But, you know, there's some interesting truth out there. This is an interesting letter from Mr. James. He says, he quotes me from the Boteach article, you know, Rabbi Shmuley. That's his name. It sounds like a parody. And that picture, this cigar, that's a real picture. I mean, I didn't put that together and paste some sort of strange picture together. That's the real guy, the real thing. And he is like a parody. Here's this Jew from New Jersey going into Utah telling the people up there how they've got to, you know, integrate. You know, and then here's the quotation. Also, there's a quotation in here from David Brooks, the New York Times columnist. And he quotes this, James quotes this, and he says, that's his last name. And so it's not James Kelso, folks. That's the second rule of rebuilding should be culturally integrate, culturally integrate, culturally integrate. The only chance we have to break the cycle of poverty is to integrate people who lack middle-class skills in the neighborhoods with people who possess these skills and who insist on certain standards of behavior. And he writes, well, then I guess that the best thing to do is for the blacks to move them into rich Jewish neighborhoods. How about Rabbi Shmuley's? Good point. Good point. I've got a few more coming. Let's see. Nice letter here from Sweden. This is from Richard, and he says, hi, everybody there at DaveDuke.com. You're doing a great job. Thanks especially, Mr. Duke, for your radio program with Robert Almgren. And I'm writing on behalf of the Swedish political party, National Democrat Party, in our newspaper, National Idag. We are going to do a report on the New Orleans situation. The problem is we can't find many good pictures. We wonder if you can help with some high resolution and large pictures we can use in our newspaper. Well, I don't have any more better pictures than what we have on the internet itself in terms of some of the things. I think you can take some of those pictures and probably use them pretty effectively, and I hope you find that interesting. This seems to be a minority letter day, because here's another letter I've gotten from a minority member. It's a black woman named Alicia. It's a long one, and I haven't been able to read it all yet, but I'll tell you what, I'll read a couple sentences, and it might be interesting for you. First off, I would like to say how your website came across to me. With many other websites depicting the woes and unnecessary guilt of the white race, there would be at least one sentence with the word, you know, and she uses the N-word, nigger, in it. In other words, Ku Klux Klan websites, but not yours. What I couldn't figure out is how to crack your website or tap into the psyche of your website. Is it white supremacist? Actually, no, I don't think so. Although I'm black, I failed to find anything in your website offensive. On the contrary, I'm rather intrigued by it. I read the article on your view on how whites have been instilled a sense of guilt in them. You stated quite fairly that the crimes of slavery were committed with black on black as well as white on black. My question to you, however, on the reason is why you feel that whites are still guilty about slavery, given that you provided them with your resourceful bit of information. Don't get me wrong, I'm not slanting against you. I'm just quite interested to know why you think many white scholars, even more information on the subject of slavery than you, still feel guilt. Politicians, even your President Dubia Bush, and still openly apologize for it. And so she goes on and on about that. But my answer to that is this. The reason why is, as I've pointed out so many times, our press is no longer our press. And if somebody in terms of the press, even of our own heritage, has an opinion that is counter to these Jewish supremacist opinions, because they're always putting down our heritage, he's not going to make it. His book's not going to get in the bestseller list. The big publishers aren't going to promote it. And I can go on and on and on. I mean, you get some things that kind of squeak through the paper curtain of media in this country, the Jewish supremacist paper curtain. but they really have almost a clamp down on the issues. Here's some new ones just coming in. I ordered the 2005 conference videos, not received them yet. Could you please look into it for me? Well, my friend John, I'm so sorry you haven't gotten those videos yet. We were all prepared to mail them just about 3 weeks ago, right before the storm hit. We got the videos in finally, about 2 days, actually 24 hours before the storm hit, and then we had to prepare, our office did, to evacuate and the rest of it. And since that time, we've had no power, no computers, intermittent phone. But we hope this week we're going to get all that taken care of. In fact, I expect those videos to be shipped and mailed very soon. I think within 2 or 3 days, we have a list of them, and we're going to start sending those out. Please stay in touch with us. If there's any problems, please let us know. It's been a difficult time for us. We've had no mail going out, and yet our bills continue to come. Our mortgages, our expenses and so forth are still there. And we certainly need your continued support. Please give us a hand. All right, let's see what else we got here. This is another question. Hello, Mr. Duke. I believe Dr. Duke. I'm not used to saying that, and I see Mr. instead of Doctor, but thank you for the title. I believe that if the U.S. did, in fact, find out that Israel is behind the 9/11 attack, wouldn't our government just cover it up the way they did the USS Liberty? Please reply. Thank you. I think they would certainly, people in the government who are of that persuasion would hide. I mean, the government of this country cooperated with the complete cover-up of the USS Liberty scandal. There was no congressional investigation, unlike the Pueblo investigation. When the Koreans seized our ship, the Liberty was a much more serious attack and violation than the Pueblo ever was. And the Israeli explanation of a mistaken identity is absolutely insane. And you can read the writings of almost the entire crew and the association of sailors that served in Liberty, and they will tell you that they saw the Israeli spotter planes come down close enough to the deck of the ship to see their expressions. They knew damn well it was an American ship. They waved at them. They came by for hours. They knew it was an American ship, and they will tell you that. But there's been no investigation. I wonder why. I wonder why. So that's pretty interesting. I've got a letter from James M. And he says, look, he says, I got another letter from James M. He says, look, we messed up. There were some songs playing. Well, we had some technical difficulties earlier in the program, but we got that straightened out. I think some Cowboy Mouth was playing, if I'm right. That's a band, by the way, that is New Orleans band. I don't particularly like their music all that much. Some of their songs are okay. But all that got straightened out, thank God. But we're working on it. We got a lot of things here. Thanks for sending me that note, my friend. Now let's go to Stormfront and catch some of the posts. Poosts? Well, I can't talk today. All right. This is from Kennewick Man. He says, Rabbi Shmuley's recent drive to integrate the state of Utah and Dr. Duke's article is one that deserves our help. We need to publicize this issue. Let all in the state of Utah learn about the adventures of the learned rabbi by using this mailing list I just gathered in the last 30 minutes with the help of Prospect Finder 2002 from HTTP, www.marketing-2000.net. And you can find this, of course, on Stormfront Town Hall section. See the attached sample with 538 addresses. So that's kind of interesting. Yes, there are ways that you can go out and you can reach people, but don't just talk to people in Utah. I think this evidence is good for everybody. Also, some very nice pictures are posted of our famous Rabbi Shmuley with that great, upstanding, wonderful, possible child molester, and you can have to make up your own mind about that, Michael Jackson. All right, let's go on to Roger Brown says, the program Kennewick Man is very useful. And then we have a reprint, which was done by the old man of the mountain about the white attacks in New Orleans. So I think that's one of the better articles, and that's another good one to send around. Tell the truth. We're not getting the truth out very much. Roger also says, I'm relaying a question from somebody else. Do you plan on speaking in the UK anytime in the near future? Well, you know, I don't know. It just depends on a whole number of factors. I do have a lot of friends there for sure. This is from Bad Brad. He says, Dr. Duke, being new to the cause, I'm sometimes having trouble making valid points in conversations. There's such a wealth of information out there, it can be difficult to remember details, and today I was thinking about how best to memorize these details when an idea struck me. Why not make a short guidebook covering the most common topics and the best responses to them? It would be good for everyone, but especially useful for those who are newly awakened. My idea is it would be in the form of questions and the best reply with statistics, facts, events, and then their sources. Sorry if this doesn't come out right. Something like, and he goes through some of the ideas and the sources. Well, what do I think? Here's what I think. I think it's a great idea. And I think that I'm very well equipped to do such a book because I've heard every argument in the thousand debates and discussions and emails that have ever been made. And the truth is that there's probably about 40 or 50 arguments that are like standard. And once you hear these standard arguments, all the arguments are either that specific argument or some sort of variation on it. I mean, that's consistent. It really is. And I'd like to do something on that, and I'll have to put that on my my long list of things to do. But I think it's a great idea. But here's my best advice for you, Brad, and that is to go in and just keep reading these books. I think My Awakening on the Race Question and Jewish Supremacism on the Jewish Question give you a tremendous arsenal of information. And I think the way you're going to learn to answer these questions and to deal with these objections and the questions you get from your friends and family and the rest of it, and they give you the standard thing, like color of, there's only color of skin, or they say, well, the Jews are religion, you know, why, you know, or they'll say, how could the Jews have been communists in the Russian Revolution? They're communists or atheists. I mean, there's a million different standard things that they say. And we have to be able to answer, you know, those responses. One of the most important ones, of course, is the one that you get from so many Christians today. And this wasn't true 20, 30 years ago. The Jewish supremacists have totally taken over a lot of evangelical Christianity. And now they're not really preaching the Christian view toward the Jewish issue, but the Jewish view about the Jewish issue. And you'll continually find Jews that will say, well, the Jews are still the chosen people of God, and we must support the Jews because the Jews are the people of the book, etc., etc. And yet New Testament quotations make it very clear that and also they'll say, another common question is, God has a special covenant with the Jews, and therefore we can't oppose anything that they do. Well, of course, all that's ridiculous, but the truth is the New Testament specifically, you know, the New Testament and the words of the Christian God say very clearly that the Jews did not continue in the covenant of God, and that in fact God formed a new covenant for those that believe in Jesus Christ. So, and yet you still hear this from so many pulpits and so many Christians. So there's many different questions on many different subjects, and I think it's a good idea to come up with answers. But again, the way you're going to learn, Brad, is to keep reading, researching and discussing this, and you're going to get into arguments since you're very new to the cause, and sometimes you're not going to be able to answer the question. Somebody's going to stump you. But what you have to do then is go back and read and research the answer, find the answer, and then you'll have it very strong, and you'll never make a mistake again on that particular question. And pretty soon you'll get all the answers down. I'm not afraid of you debating the truth. I'm not afraid of you reading the opposite side in their books. As long as you read our side, because I certainly believe in freedom of speech, and I believe that I got an email. I just kind of broke my train of thought. Not an email, but I got a message from Ulysses that says, stick with the regular title theme kindly, the rock pop music mixed on top, and this is David Duke, and the regular theme is messy. Really messy? Well, Ulysses, this was a technical glitch, and I agree. I agree. Yeah, Mary Kelly writes, he says, thanks for posting that. I thought I missed my medication today. Now that's surreal. Mary, I didn't know you were on medication, you know, but I thought you were always pretty cognizant about everything you said. But I guess, you know, sometimes we need a bit of medication. I got, or at least some of our people do. It is very depressing. I got another email. I don't have it really at my fingertips right now, but I got another, a very good email from an individual. And he said that it's just so disheartening to see what we see. I just get sick over it, and sometimes I feel like crying. And another reaction is sometimes I feel like I just want to turn off, you know, close down the internet, go away, take a vacation, you know, go play a game of golf. I don't want to think about it. And you know, that's what our natural tendencies are. We don't really want to face up to difficulties. And it's so true. It's human nature. You know, many of us tend to want to run and hide from problems. And also we get terribly depressed by things and we don't know exactly how to deal with them. And let me tell you something. I'm just like you are. I'm feeling this kind of depression, sometimes hopelessness. It's going to come to anybody in this cause because the enemy is so overwhelming. The media also makes it appear that way because they have so much power in the media. You just see their point of view everywhere, and you see their power everywhere, attacking our point of view and suppressing our point of view and demonizing our point of view, and it's very, very difficult. And then you run into so many of our own people that basically believe it. I mean, they've been taught it all their lives. You could tell a young kid from the time they're small that fire won't hurt you, and that young child will believe it until, of course, he sticks his finger into the flame. And people are obviously affected by what they read. You know, they're affected by what they're told. The white leader Rockwell used to say it real well when he said people are like a computer. If you feed false information to a computer, you can't get good information out, and that's so true. I do think that there's an instinctual kind of understanding that comes with our people, and that our people have a possibility to instinctually know what's right and wrong. I believe that exists in all of us, that there's like a true compass somewhere deep inside, and that compass points toward the true north, you know, or what's right. I think we know what's right deep in our hearts somewhere, but also it takes an understanding of what's going on, and it takes an inquiry into the issues that we're facing, an open-minded inquiry, especially if you're, you know, of the opposite persuasion. I was becoming a little liberal when I was very young, but at least I was open-minded about it. But I had some sympathies. And in fact, the truth is, in many ways, I still have a lot of sympathies for the black people in our country. I mean, they face a difficult time. I mean, look at the number of them in jail and probation, parole. Of course, they've done things that's caused that. Look at the communities. Look at the black kids shot to death on their streets. You know, it's a bad situation. This one person, you know, Bob Twain put it pretty well, and he said that you know, this stuff is not the way our society is constructed today. This forced integration society is not good for either people. Each people really need to control their own affairs and have a society that's more natural in terms of being constructed in their own spiritual, cultural values. Now, I realize those values for African Americans might be quite different than the ones for, say, white Americans. I understand that. But, you know, they deserve the right to do what they need to do, to have a society that reflects their values. It's not for us to determine, really. It's not for us to determine what kind of society they're supposed to live in. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's about it. I've done an interesting show, I think, today for you, and there's a lot going on in the world, and I will be back with you tomorrow, and we'll be discussing more of these issues. Please take those 10 fingers, two hands of yours, and before you go back to work, or before you take a nap, or before you watch a ball game, or before you meet with your lady friend a little later, you know, go ahead and spread some of these documents, these articles around the web. It's going to be up to you whether our people survive. We've all got to take personal responsibility for this struggle, for the victory of our people. If we don't take it, we are not going to survive. Thank you all very much, and I will certainly be with you tomorrow. And until then, God bless you, and take care, and please do what you can to spread this word. Bye-bye now.
This has been David Duke for our heritage and our freedom.